Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Stargirl Squadcast. I'm Cameron.
I'm Adiba.
And I'm Tam.
Today, we are talking about Season 3, Episode 2, The Suspects. I've been really enjoying this season so far. I liked it a lot better than Season 2. I don't know if I like it better than Season 1 fully. I don't know if I can fully commit to saying that.
I don't think it's fair to say that right now. It's literally Episode 2. We don't have to be saying whether or not we prefer it. I didn't like the first two episodes of Season 1,
most of the season.
It's not fair yet to kind of make a judgment like that, I don't think. But I'm definitely enjoying myself so far. I think that's the point.
I think if we compare this to the other episodes, episode 2s, this is the best episode 2. Is that valid?
Yes.
Hold on, let me think back to all the episode 2s.
I did like the Jenny episode, but this one is superior. I know we've covered it before. I know you
don't
like
covered.
It. I did like
the
it.
Jenny episode.
But I prefer this one was just, yes, I did enjoy this one.
I don't remember what happened in Season 2, Episode 2.
It's Jenny. It's like when she comes to town.
Oh yeah. I actually love
Our
season
night, we're
two
matching Demon. Demon.
Yeah.
Denim.
No. I think my ranking for Episode 2s is definitely Season 2, Season 1, and then Season 3.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Season 1, Episode 2, I don't think anything really happened. No. That's true. That's
Stuff
absolutely
happened.
A lie. Brainwave is in a coma at the end of that episode. So.
It was really funny. I liked it.
Yeah. Anyway, talking about this episode specifically, right off the bat, we are starting out back in a flashback to the day of the murder with the gambler getting into his little cabin and, not cabin.
The trailer.
What's it called? It's like a trailer park. The Cornhuskers. Let's go Nebraska. I think that's what it's in reference to, the University of Nebraska. They're the Cornhuskers for non-American listeners out there. Yes, they are. There's a bunch of stupid one. Like, there's the Purdue Boilermakers. my undergrad college was West Virginia. They were the Mountaineers, which isn't the worst one, but it's still not great. So there's a bunch of stupid ones out there for your state college.
It opens up with a killer song, like, what a way to start. But to be fair, episode 2, season 2, the flashback they had with Girls Just Want to Have Fun, and that was a really fun as
Right. Yeah, they did do that last time.
That's how the episode started, right?
Yeah.
It was incredible. I loved it.
I'm really intrigued. I kind of like that they are doing all these flashbacks to the day of the murder. And I mean, all
they're
of
these. They're flashbacks, but
the
they're new
one.
Material. We've never seen
they're
any
new
of the
material.
Content before, which is
but,
what makes it
so it's
really
interesting.
Good. Yeah.
But I am, at the same time, a little sad that we're not going to be getting those classic, like, 10 years ago flashbacks.
Yes, I they might still be coming later
possible,
on.
It's possible, yeah.
But so far, no. Which it is, but I feel like there's only so much that they can flash back to from the crime scene. Like, there's only so much that happened that day.
Well, I think it's going to be the sort of thing where it's like, he actually saw, like, 20 different people that
day. Oh, that would be really...
Like, you know, that's, they love doing like ridiculous things like that. So
his Allison De Laurentiis arc,
it sets up the gambler's way of life, I guess, right? So we see like he likes finer things. He has purple everything because purple is his color. He has his lucky number 7, like, so 7 is around a lot, which I think
he's
might
narrating
be important
to himself.
Yes, okay.
Time.
Also, his self narration was so funny to me. It's like, it's so ridiculous, but it's hysterical because you can tell this is a man who didn't really have much friends and had to keep himself amused. But
quack quack little friend.
Quack quack little friend. Yeah. But yeah, so his favorite number is clearly lucky number 7. It didn't really help him that day, clearly. But that I think is important because later on there may be things that they may need to figure out in the trailer, such as the laptop that he puts down, and maybe the number 7 is a hint, you know? That's what I'm thinking. Since
it definitely is.
You know what? Crackpot theory of the day. 7 soldiers.
Ooh.
This means nothing.
It means absolutely nothing,
seven.
But it's still 7. That's so correct. If I was Becky and I saw my father was like that, I would be so embarrassed.
Well, why would you be embarrassed? You've never met this. I mean, I guess, yeah.
I wouldn't be. I wouldn't be. But I mean, it's endearing. Like, he has a domino set up. He has, the little duck also has a horseshoe, which is another sign of good luck. So, I mean, he has all these little tokens and none of them helped him that day. So,
oh yeah.
But yeah, that's it. As then Crusher shows up. And I like the way that they show him in the side mirror, like his face in the side mirror first before you actually see him in the car.
It's crazy that a career criminal, a career criminal would show up to a crime scene in the family
minivan.
The stickers.
I know.
What are you doing? You can be identified.
So in the family minivan, it's
they're
so
literally
funny.
The decals. The decal. Yeah, that's how you say it. It's decal. My mom makes fun of me because I think I said it decal, and I thought that was how you said it for a while, and it's not. And but my brain defaults to decal, but it's not. It's decal, right? D-E-C-A-L.
How do you pronounce bagel, then?
Bagel.
No, what?
Oh, because a lot of people pronounce it differently.
Okay.
Yeah, he's bringing a bat, and he's really thinking about whacking the gambler.
Whack. Give him a nice little tap.
A little love tap, but tap he doesn't do that. I don't know why he would be motivated to do that.
Oh, okay. Hold on, though. Hold on. Okay, I actually... There are two things. He says it's payback time, okay? So payback for what? What did the gambler do to the Crocs? In the previously before, okay, on the little segment that showed what happened the last episode and also some episode segments of season two, it has Artemis, who's not in this episode, by the way, and it specifically has her saying the lines, the Crocs don't forgive and don't forget.
Right, you're right, you're right.
So, clearly the gambler did something to the Crocs, and we just don't have the history there. We don't know what. And we know that the gambler drained the Shades funds from last episode. I don't know if he did the same to them. It doesn't seem like he did. But clearly, because I don't think money is like necessarily an issue for them the same kind of way. I think it's something personal like that he did that like pissed them off. That's why. So they definitely will have motivation, because I think that people are going to be quick to dismiss the Crocs because they're like, of course it's going to be them. They like to kill. But I think in order for them to be serious suspects, they actually have to have some serious beef with the gambler. Right. And that's why.
They have to have like an actual motive.
That's why he would have said it's payback. So clearly they actually something had happened. And it's not that suspicious, because the one constant about the ISA is that they've all hated each other.
Yes.
And they were all willing to kill each other, even though they're on the same team. So it is, you know, it's not that crazy that everyone else thinks that it's each other that did it to each other.
The Shade also pops in for a little bit after Crusher leaves, but we are going to get into that later, because obviously that's touched upon later, because then it cuts to title card. They play a mystery version of the Cosmic Staff theme, which I loved. It's
How do you
fun.
Know that?
I like when they change motifs around a little bit.
It's the theme, but you can tell the theme. It's just they make little changes to it.
We smash cut to the pit stop where the Core Four and Pat and Sylvester are all hanging out, not hanging
outside,
out.
Outside,
serious
shows,
discussion.
It shows that Pat's car is parked outside the pit stop, but not Rick's car. And I find that interesting, because at the end of this episode, you see Rick's car parked and only Rick's car. So I'm curious how they got, like, how did Rick get there? Where's his car? It's such a little, like, minor thing, but I did notice it.
I didn't even notice that.
Just because it tells you who's going to be in the pit stop before they show you the scene.
Okay, yeah, sure.
So Courtney announces the murder. They invite Sylvester into the pit stop. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're like, oh, who would have the motive to kill him? And Sylvester immediately pipes up and goes like, oh, anyone that knew him, pretty much. Which is like, okay, Sylvester, shut your mouth. Like, you're the first one that said something suspicious, technically.
No, but, okay, I don't like Sylvester, but I think he had a point. I think anybody that knew the gambler would immediately want him dead. He was not a very nice person.
I agree. Like, no, Sylvester did have points here, and because he was also the one that said that likely it was one of the ISA members that killed him, which is makes sense. Technically, like, very basic, it makes sense. It's interesting because here, last season, the main thing was that Courtney was keeping everything from Pat. But here, right away, she tells Pat right away, oh, there was a murder. Oh, it was the gambler and everything, which is good because it they're building up from what happened last mm-hmm. season with the secrets. Like, she's being really honest with Pat. Problem is, Pat's involving Sylvester in with everything, and I think that's going to be an issue. I think Sylvester shouldn't necessarily yeah. have access to all of the information that they have, because yeah. clearly he's going to be causing problems.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I don't even like Sylvester. I need him gone, actually. Why does he have to be involved in everything?
I don't particularly think everyone is jumping for joy about Sylvester. Like, he's fun sometimes.
No.
But the point is that he treats people badly and he causes problems. So yeah. that's kind of the point of him being there. Right.
But if, like, Sylvester was really a good person, he would have more than one person show up at his funeral.
But we don't really know if the Shade was lying or not about that. But at the same time, I mean, that's surprising, because it would mean that his own sister, who should have been alive at that point, also didn't show up to his funeral, which is interesting.
That should tell you how awful of a person he is.
But we've known that from the last two seasons. Like, that's not a surprise to me. It seems the only... is because this entire time, the person who's been giving the... basically, the narrative of Starman as a hero has been Pat. And Pat's the only person who mm-hmm. actually thinks this man is a hero, aside from yeah. his friends. And he's saying he misses his friends, which is also interesting, because I mean, we're kind of jumping to the very end of the season, of the episode here, but just the way that Sylvester remembers the past and the way that Pat remembers the past are very different, and mm-hmm. I guess it depends on the dynamics that they've had on the team. So to go back to the pit stop scene, we have Courtney, like, again, she's talking about what they saw, and Rick's like, I do not care that the gambler is dead.
No, because it's so real. That's all I have to say about it. Because he's right. He made a very valid point.
But if there is... the thing is, the difference is between a one-time murder and a potential serial killer, and we don't know yet, right? So, like, a serial killer, they're the JSA. They do kind of need to care if there is a serial killer. So... uh-oh, I just accidentally activated Siri by saying serial killer. Stop, stop. What is going on? No. I did not say, hey, Siri. Okay, that's freaky.
I forgot exactly what Yolanda said, but in the scene, she had a really funny response.
Yeah, she was like, first she was like, oh, case dismissed then, because they were doing flashback sequence between...
right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so because basically they... Yolanda was like, Cindy was holding a gun, and then they flash back to the end where there's a cliffhanger in episode one, and they show that Cindy apparently was trying to do her own investigation. She showed up, mm-hmm. she saw the gambler was dead, she picked up the gun that just happened to be with him, and then it went off, apparently. I kind of do
believe
that. Which
is still stupid.
It is stupid. It's very stupid of her to do that, but I believe that she would do that, because mm-hmm. she's not the brightest when it comes to things to do in the moment like that, as we've seen before. Mm-hmm. She's smart in her planning, but when she's actually stuck in a weird situation, she always seems to do the wrong thing.
Yeah. So
it's very opposite to Courtney.
It's so true.
Yes. And they're literally opposites of each other.
Then we have Rick and Beth sitting very close to each other.
They sat next to each other. You don't get it.
Not just sitting next to each other, but, like, Rick was, like, fully leaning into Beth's mm-hmm. side. And whenever she wasn't speaking or he wasn't speaking to her, his arm, he would, like, sit up straight again. So he was, I don't know, it's funny. But Aronite is real. That's
yeah.
That's the
I
point.
I remember when I saw that, I was freaking out a little, and I immediately went, okay, but Aronite sat beside each other. This is a win, people. And then I went... and then I realized that he also looked at her
yeah.
and said her name.
He said her name. Okay, but listen.
He said her name.
Let's actually unpack the conversation,
the
though, okay?
Is yes. so on the floor.
The bar is so low. No, but seriously,
we're
okay.
off of crumbs.
So Beth is trying to say that mm-hmm. she's trying to basically defend Cindy, because Cindy had the gun go off when she was holding it, but there's no actual bullet wounds on the gambler when they went as far as they were able to see. So she was like, well, that's not how the gambler died, so it's not Cindy. And you have Rick look at her and be like, oh, you sweet summer child, that means nothing. But he says it very nicely, you know, like, for Rick. So you just kind of have Beth kind of being disappointed, like, oh, I guess you're right, kind of thing, which is fun. And then you have Sylvester start to say, oh, I bet it's someone as powerful as Solomon Grundy. And that triggers Rick, because Rick's like, excuse me, that monster's dead. I would know. I had to bury him like 55 times this summer. So trust me, he's dead. And now Sylvester is like, are you sure? Are you actually sure? Which causes Rick to later go and check for sure. So other than that, the main point of the scene is that they basically agree that the laptop is missing. And they think that whoever has the laptop is the killer, because otherwise why would they steal it? It's not, that's why I said, Courtney's bedroom. She's looking at the letter. She's reading it, and the daddy issues seriously hit, right? So specifically the part that's like, oh, well, I wasn't there for you for your birth or your birthdays, and, you know, I don't have any explanation for why I did the stuff that I did. And she's just very clearly putting herself in this mysterious mm-hmm. Becky Sharp's shoes, because she's this projecting. Is basically projecting. She exactly. is. This is what she wants. Like, this is kind of what she wants, and she's upset because she's like, well, I didn't get this, and now this didn't happen, and, you know, she's upset. So she stays in her room thinking about this letter. Apparently she read it, like, a gazillion times. Like, she said, like, she read it maybe, what, like, 12 times? A lot of times, she said. So that's what Courtney's doing that night. Meanwhile, then it cuts to Cindy doing mad science.
We see, like, diagrams of, like, arm tendons, and there's, like, a cut-up lizard hand that may or may not be Dragon King's hand.
May or may it's, not like, be her jar. Father's. Yeah.
And she's clearly working on her arm because she has, like, some severe arm pain of some kind.
And it does look like she has a bandage. Like, it could have been just
on her right
hand,
which is
one
the one that the shiv got
was taken
ripped
out
of.
Yeah, because Eclipso ripped it out, right?
But I checked later, and she doesn't wear it at school, so she's clearly hiding it.
Yeah, so I don't really know exactly what that is. I presume, at the very least, I think she's getting another one in that arm, because it would make sense.
It does make sense.
Did you guys notice how she's always wearing full sleeves now?
No.
Ooh.
But that's a good observation.
Yeah. That's interesting. Because, well, I'm sure it doesn't look good. You know, like,
maybe she's scaly underneath there.
No, don't go there.
Maybe she's covering up the Band-Aid.
Did you just... You think that, like, she's turning into, like, actual, like, dragon scales?
No, well, yeah, what? Like, maybe it's just on her arm. I don't think it's going to go to her face.
Oh, because, like that's how she, like, regenerates kind of thing. Like,
she's studying lizards.
Like, the lizard. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay. We move on, and we have the scene with Rick checking Grundy. So we've already mentioned that. We can kind of skip past that. He doesn't really find anything. It's, like, very short. I will say I'm obsessed with hearing that hourglass theme. I'm so happy to hear it whenever it comes on.
They only play it in the woods now.
Which is sad.
I feel like they need to play it somewhere else.
Well, they should play it when he finally actually, you know, in the trailer, the season 3 trailer, when you see him powering up.
Yeah,
that's an interesting scene because at
but
first
is that
we
going
thought,
to be when he's fully fixed, or is that
well,
just going to be in general?
That's the thing. I was just about to bring that up because before we assumed that's when he fixes the hourglass. Now we know the hourglass isn't necessarily broken. I mean, it's broken, but it's not like totally unusable. Now he just has problems with it. I don't necessarily think that's going to be when he fixes it. It may just be when he thinks he's fixed it enough, or he doesn't care. He's just going to go put it on and do something because he's actually has a mission in mind to go somewhere and attack somebody. And we're pretty sure it's episode 5 or 6 where that happens. So I think maybe that's when we'll hear the music come again, and not necessarily, maybe it'll be like an epic version of it, where because it looks like a huge scene.
Yeah, they
you
only
know?
Ever do like a soft version of it.
It'd be really fun to hear that song as a remix when he's actually like beating someone up.
But like really dramatic and like
really dramatic.
Cinematic music.
Yes, I would love that. Okay, so moving on. Then we have Pat trying to see if Court's going to ever show up to school on time because she's still sitting in the corner with that letter in the morning. So clearly that letter really did some damage. And that's when she says, oh, you know, I would have given to have my dad say half the things in this letter to me. And she reveals she knows the other friends of hers don't care about the Gambler's death technically, but she cares because of this connection that, you know, got lost between the Gambler and his daughter. And she says, no matter what, she's going to go find Becky and she's going to give her that letter. I think that's very important mm-hmm. for the second half of the season.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We cut over to Mike and Jakeem. We see that the excuse that has been given is that there was a tornado, which is the most ridiculous excuse. It really is.
I love the tornado. It's
one trailer that was completely destroyed. Nothing else was destroyed. There were witnesses. That nobody's questioning.
It could be a microburst. None of the microbursts JSA can be pretty intense, but usually they do go through other parts of town. Yeah, so anyways, I love the exchange that Mike and Jakeem have here with that. This is the best thing that could ever happen to us, Jakeem. A man being murdered? No. A murdering murderer being murdered. A nation mourns. Okay, so then we get to the American Dream. And we have James Chappell's valiant effort trying to not be suspicious by talking about the weird weather in Blue Valley and failing.
But I like that Barbara's like, he's trying.
Yeah, it's really sweet. I love the Chappell Whitmore solidarity at the American Dream. And we have that really annoying lady again who was technically right the last time, who was like, serves Mr. Sharp right, and then says immediately after, God rest his soul or whatever, may he rest in peace, which is like, how can you say both sentences one after the other? You either mean it or you don't. Don't say both.
I think she was saying the second part just so she doesn't get fired for talking bad about the former CFO.
Yeah, but does anyone else even care? Don't know.
No.
Then we get introduced to this random new worker, Tim. And you know it's bad when Tim calls Barbara Babs. Like, you know it's bad. We've never heard anyone call her that before. Babs, like for Barbara. But, like, no one's ever called her that before. So you,
oh, my God. Like, and he's acting like he's her boss.
When he's not.
But, well, he wants not, yeah. to be.
He wants to
he
be.
Wants
okay.
to be.
But so, what would his position even be if he was the boss?
I don't know what the hierarchy of power is.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly.
But the point
it's
is,
so complicated.
He's just sexist, and obviously he's sad to see that Barbara's a girl boss, and he wants to ruin her vibe.
I love exactly. this stupid storyline. I'm going to say it. It's so stupid, it's fun.
But can we talk about the potential here? Because clearly, it's going to lead to Paula's
gonna
being
kill
mad.
Him? Yeah.
She's going to kill him, or she's going to maim him. Something's going to happen to that man, because they're going to be besties. And this man's in the way? Absolutely not. She's going to be like, you're the one that deserves the raise. Actually, okay, that makes sense, because that's what they do with Artemis all the time, right? Like, there's a new football coach. He benches Artemis. Artemis is upset. Paula's like, what's wrong? She's like, I got that. She's like, he's going to die. And then they kill him. So it makes sense that this is what happens with Barbara, right? So, like, he's going to get the raise. Barbara's going to be like, I can't believe this is my boss. She's like, why are you upset? And she's like, this man is here and he's being sexist. And she's like, oh, no. And then the next day he's dead. We have Paula break into the office. And so this is the second time it's going to keep happening, clearly. And she's like, oh, I'm trying my best. And she's also so proud of Artemis. And she's like, how dare Courtney not tell Barbara how amazing my daughter was? And it's it's a parallel to Crusher always breaking into basically the Whitmore Dukin house. So clearly every episode or every other episode, we're going to have Crusher break into the Whitmore Dukins and Paula break into the American Dream. So we love a couple that does the same thing in separate places. Also, we have Paula being like, I don't know how to bake. They want me to bake a German chocolate cake. She just ruled it out that she wasn't, and also Crusher wasn't the one who murdered the gambler, because she's like, hello, we're actually like criminal career people.
Masterminds.
Like, we wouldn't just not get rid of the body. That makes no sense. Which then Barbara's like, ew, don't tell me about that, please, which is funny. But it's true. She had a point there. And, then back to the chocolate cake stuff. Can we just talk about the fact that Barbara seems so confused about how to live life when she has been living life, like, in Blue Valley for X
Do you
amount
mean
of
Paula?
Years before? I said Paula.
I think you said Barbara.
Oops. You said Barbara.
I meant Paula. They're so Paula. Close.
Yeah,
but they
I don't know.
Names.
I think this is just kind of like a classic Flanderization. Oh, my God. Flanderization.
Right. True. We could also argue that they had an outlet before because they would consistently kill people before, and now she doesn't.
And they were like covering for like an alibi, but they don't have to cover for anything.
They had like that fun like criminal secret to keep them like going, I guess, for X amount of years, and now they don't. So they're bored. But that's not true because they did say they haven't had a date night in a very long time when they did do the attack on the JSA on episode 6 of season 1. We get to the cafeteria scene. Beloved cafeteria scene. I can't wait to get one every single episode. The lighting, exquisite. The outfits, amazing. The dynamics, phenomenal. I just love all of it. Mm-hmm. We have Courtney explaining what the official apparent reason of death was, which was the fact that he... I don't even remember, and I made a whole gift set about it. But something to do with the fact that, yeah, it was confirmed that he was stabbed or something like that. Instead of, there was no, like, gunshot. Mm-hmm. Like, that was, and it was, like, about a thing with the tornado. Okay, the main point that I love about this calf scene is Yolanda versus the tornado and the way that they all say tornado. A tornado. It's a tornado. And I know that specifically Yolanda does not buy this tornado excuse. Courtney, clearly, you know, she also thinks it's wild that the tornado excuse is, like, working. You can see it on her face. And Beth is basically confirming that whatever the autopsy showed, it suggested that, yes, he was stabbed right in the heart, which is sus, but that the coroner said specifically that it was probably from a tornado. And the way that Beth says it, I know that some people online were a little bit confused because they thought that Beth was trying to say that she believed it was a tornado. She's not. And the way that she says it, she's like, a tornado. Like, she puts attitude in the word tornado because she also is trying to say that she agrees with Yolanda that the tornado excuse is stupid. But, you know, like that. So she's agreeing there, but it's just, she's not going to be as vocally outrageously, I don't even know what the last word is in that sentence, but she's not as outwardly thinking that the tornado thing is as ridiculous as Yolanda is, because Yolanda straight up like glaring at Courtney for even thinking that they can mention it. It's a tornado.
See, I want to go back to the whole stab wound specifically.
Okay, let's do that. Yeah,
because they're saying that it was directly to the heart, which implies one of two things, or potentially both, that either the killer knows how to kill somebody, like they know that's
it wasn't an accident,
insta-kill, or they're very familiar with anatomy, so like you would, interesting, even if you haven't killed, like,
and isn't it, this is gonna just sound
really bad, but I am a biologist, I know where people's hearts are, I know that,
well, like, it's gonna sound bad when you say it, it sounds really bad. If you just said I'm a biologist, I know where the heart is, but if you say it sounds really bad, then you're making yourself sound
like, but my point is that, like, I know what parts of the human body to stab theoretically if I wanted to.
You just made it sound worse. You could have just stopped at
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Okay, go ahead. Continue.
That's it.
That's it. Okay. So I have to bring up the fact that the person who has, as we've seen in the show, actually been stabbed in the heart was Starman in the first episode by Icicle.
Interesting.
Cindy comes by. She's mad that she wasn't at the meeting the other day. She's mad that she's not at this meeting, but she just simply hadn't come to lunch yet. Like, there's no reason to be mad about that one. Like, that's on you, girly. Just get to lunch a minute earlier. But I will say that they did point out in the pit stop scene earlier that Courtney specifically did not invite Cindy. So it is true.
That is true.
That she was at least somewhat responsible.
I was gonna say responsible for not inviting her when she's the one that's saying, oh, we gotta keep Cindy like in our good graces, and she's give her a chance.
I also do think that it's important to note that, so obviously their current hypothesis is that if they find the laptop, then they're going to find the killer at the same time because it's the same person, presumably. That's
their idea.
But obviously that's going to be wrong because I don't think that Cindy killed it or killed him, but mm-hmm. I think that Cindy is going to plant evidence. She's going to plant the laptop and put it somewhere else.
Ooh, to like make it seem like it's not her.
To make it, no, not necessarily to make it seem like it's not her, but more so to
gain their trust and like find it later.
No, to make it seem like she found something by herself without them.
Oh, okay.
So that they think that she's a more valuable member of the team.
Okay, that's like kind of where I was going the second one.
Okay,
yeah,
sorry. No, but I think that that's potentially what she's going to do with it, because she doesn't know how to hack or anything like that, so it's pretty useless for her to have
Cindy?
Well, I was going to say she's gonna need Beth if that's her plan,
right?
Yeah,
which is interesting because we did have like a very very lighthearted tease of, oh, maybe Cindy and Beth will become friends way back, which I don't know if that's real, but it would be fun. It would be definitely be fun.
Yeah,
it would be fun if they kind of had a little bonding moment over that, and then Beth is like, oh, by the way, since you're so good at chemistry, do you mind giving Rick a hand with the hourglass? That would be that would be fun. But before we get to there, my favorite dynamic, no, not dynamic, but definitely my favorite exchange in this entire episode is the "those circumstances were completely circumstantial," and then "what does that even mean?" between Cindy and Rick. Let's move on to go to the diner.
Yes, so how hard is it to brew tea? Because I'm going to, honesty hour, I've never brewed tea before in my life.
Okay,
so
well, I drink tea all the time.
Right,
and I use an electric. I use an electric kettle. So, you know, the thing is, each different tea, like most different blends, have a specific temperature that it tastes best at if you boil the water to this. So usually I always just do 100 because that's what you need. That's the minimum that you need. But certain on like the actual package of the tea, it'll say, oh, brew this to 104, or this one goes to 106, and then you let it steep for like X amount of minutes, and then you take it out, and then, you know, all these little specific instructions. And I'm sure that the shade has extremely specific needs of like, yes, it needs to be this exact temperature or else it's not perfect or correct. I personally cannot stand Earl Grey, so the fact that he likes Earl Grey that much is disappointing. But I'm pretty sure
Earl Grey an actual person?
That
yes, yeah, he was.
Maybe the shade knows him. That's why he said, "Oh, Earl Grey himself would be so." Oh, that would be fun. Maybe that's why he was so offended, because he's like, "I cannot believe you are actually offending my dead friend from long ago." That would
be
funny.
Friends.
They used to be besties. I love that. But yeah, the way that he delivered the line, the "find a cup, a pinnacle." That's not good.
Oh, that was rough.
That was bad. That was not working. It's all right. But the "find a cup" part, I'm not even trying anymore. It was so funny. Don't quote me on my British accent. We're not trying today. But it's just the emphasis of that. It was almost scary. Also, apparently they spent all night doing this too, right? So, because
yes,
yeah,
so that's
says
providing
that's
him
alibi.
With an alibi. Mm-hmm. So.
So then Sylvester and Pat walk in. Can I just say, the way that Pat leans in and whispers "the gambler" and then looks away as if he never said that was so, like, Pat, what are you doing?
Pat Bester dynamic.
Pat Bester.
I kind of love it.
It's Bester. Fun. It's terrible.
It's fun. It's awful and it's abusive.
It is abusive.
However.
It's
however,
awful.
However.
It is a little bit fun.
Okay. I am going to say, I don't like the sheer amount of Sylvester. We've talked about it a little bit. I don't like how much they're putting on him. I think that it's mostly because he's a new character, and so they want to flesh him out a little bit earlier in the season than later, so that you care about him, I guess. And also because they have Joel McHale, and a lot of people, they think, are watching the show for Joel McHale, which I don't think is actually true, but I think that they think that, and that's why they're making it so prevalent. And I have nothing against him, but I'm not really intrigued by his dynamic with Courtney at all. Like, it's not really doing anything for me.
I don't mind it, but not better than what she already has. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he's teaching her a few.
But I wouldn't mind them as enemies, like, you know, like that.
I would be fine with them doing that. But, I really actually do like how stupid Pat
the
Pat
is. Because I think it's kind of funny.
It is kind of funny actually. Because the whole diner scene was just fun.
It was fun. The Shade judging them. Like the look on his face, them again. Like
right,
like diddle with their names like from Alice in Wonderland.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum, yeah. That's what he, I feel like that's how he characterizes them in his brain. The thing is, Sylvester matters to Pat, and he used to matter to Courtney, but he doesn't anymore. Like, he doesn't anymore, really. So, I know that, like, Courtney wants to impress him, but there, the whatever emotional weight that he had has kind of been dusted by the point of season three. I feel like Sylvester being more involved in with the adults is the smart choice, because I feel like you can already tell that the kids aren't like jumping for joy that he's here, which is also surprising, because you would think that Rick might care a little bit more, that he can get some sort of, I don't know, info about his father, and he seems to not care at all about Starman.
Yeah, that is kind of interesting. But I will say that I do think that Sylvester and Yolanda are going to be besties.
Oh, yeah?
Based off of this interaction. Because just to how much he can't let the Shade go. And he can't, like, he's like, you're guilty. And we are seeing in the next episode, presumably the next episode, that he's not going to want Cindy to be a part of the group because she's also guilty. So I think that he and Yolanda are going to
possibly
kind of mesh over that, especially because we see the descriptions where, like, Sylvester is going to become the semi
The leader. Yeah. And they're
of
definitely
the JSA.
Also, maybe that's
so I think
Rick
I think that
also...
especially Yolanda is going to be like, yeah.
True. And maybe that's where Rick finally, like,
talks to his dad's friend.
It would be interesting, though, because again, if the Shade is right and nobody, actually that's not true, never mind, I was going to say, if the Shade is right, no one showed up to Sylvester's funeral except for Pat, that includes our man, but that actually makes sense because he was probably on the run, specifically in the Pat Vester scene. Then we have the fun flashback. I remember I mentioned this. I mentioned it on the podcast before.
Yes.
That I said that hopefully we have, like, bad narration type of flashbacks, because that would be fun. And it
I think it's super fun that they can be falsified.
So
that adds an extra layer to it, because we don't know 100% if the one at the beginning of the episode is true or false.
That's true.
If every single flashback isn't 100% based in reality. They're just based on whoever is telling the flashback.
Whoever's telling
or, like,
the story.
Whoever's perspective is. So that perspective could be neutral in the beginning, or it could be following the Shade or Crusher or whatever. You know,
I would love to hear the Crusher narration of the interaction going on, because you know the word choices are going to be so funny.
So much.
It would be so funny. And then he'd be like, the gambler would be like, I have to get ripped now, excuse me. And he walks out of the trailer. And he's like, that's how it happened. And then I invited him to my gym, but he never showed up. Or something like that. You know that's just not how whatever it is went at all, but we would enjoy it.
Obviously, then they get in that actual physical fight.
Yes.
And Pat.
Pat can't even tear them apart. He's struggling.
Pat's awkwardly just kind of like.
He's just gripping onto their shoulders, like, help.
And then
help.
He's not even moving when Sylvester wants to leave the diner, and Pat's just standing
there. I know.
There,
he's
like,
just standing there. And then he's saying, hey, see ya, to, like, random extras. Like, now you we dip into dangerous territory with Pat Fester when they actually get outside. And
right,
in
because
private, and
Sylvester very much wants Pat to still be a sidekick.
Yeah, and he's like,
very
shut
much.
Up,
yeah.
What were you doing? Be quiet,
it
I'm in
to
charge.
Me.
You're dead for 10 years, and you think that a grown man who had always been older than you is going to just shut up and listen to you because he used to do it? Well, that's ridiculous. I know it's not ridiculous because we're talking about Pat Dugan, but it is ridiculous. But I was very pleased to see that he did stand up for himself here. So then we cut to Courtney in school. And it's Miss Wood's class. And I miss Miss Wood's. And I want to see her actually in person.
Say to your theory of her being clock hang or whatever, there were a lot of ticking clocks.
There were. I'm telling you, every single time there are a lot of clocks. I know I sound crazy, but hear me out on that. And it also makes sense because if she becomes Rick's mentor, okay, like sort of mentor type person, she's also associated to time. So it makes sense to me. It really does. I love that theory of mine. I feel like...
And I know that they're, of late, with the whole new JSA lineup, they're doing a lot of things that are inspired by this show. Like, they brought back Yolanda and Beth for the new JSA lineup, which they weren't in before. And they... Like, basically, I was looking at stuff since Infinite Frontier, and they basically... Courtney's bedroom, we already knew from, like, the art that they released is in the comics is 100% the one from the show. But the school, Blue Valley
High School, it's also the comics now
is 100%. Like, it has the same, like, statue outside.
Yeah.
And the same lockers and everything. Like, they're 100% modeling it after the show. So we know that Clock King is going to be... I believe we know that Clock King is going to be a
character in the comics.
Stargirl's title. So.
Yeah. So I would. It would just. I don't think she's. I don't think she may be Clock Queen. Like if they do like a gender bent version or anything like that. But I feel like she would be related to the family.
But moving on, Courtney is in the middle of a test. I'm pretty sure. Well, she just. She just had a textbook out, so it might not be.
It might just be quiet. Yeah. No, I think it was just like doing math exercises.
But like, yeah, it's dead silent in that classroom, and Courtney is just pulled out.
Yeah.
Sylvester, being like, it's time to level up, like a video game,
like Frogger.
I
know. It's really funny. That.
And Courtney's like,
He's just 10 years
behind. I just wanted to
shout
that out, because that was just
funny. It is funny.
Frogger is not 10 years behind. Frogger is a game that was old in, like, 2005.
I know, but he died. Yeah, but...
It's a frog crossing the street.
Okay, that's really just old. But he is old, so fine.
Oh my god,
it's
like Crossy Roads.
It is kind of like Crossy Road.
Okay, so let's move on.
So we cut over to, like... I think it's important to note the entire time that he is on screen this episode in both scenes that he's in, and he's only on screen for like literally a minute and a half. Like, it's not a very long time at all. The entire time they are blasting scary music.
Oh yeah,
underneath him. Like, they are not subtle about it. They're
this kid's going through it.
He is going through it. He actually gets to be an emo art kid this episode.
Finally!
We love describing him as an emo art kid, but he's But he's never actually done
legitimately... He's like a golden retriever, but now he's going to be like a bulldog.
No, I always thought he was an emo art kid.
No,
why? What made him emo?
Yeah, he wasn't...
I don't know.
People
he's
just described him as
a lot of emotions.
I
think he...
But don't everybody have a lot of emotions?
Yeah, no. But I think it's just... Personally, I think he's a Pisces, so he just kind of feels every emotion a million times more than the average human. Okay.
Okay, so...
There's no science to back this up. This is just a headcanon, but I truly...
So I remember when we saw the picture of, like a two-second clip of Cameron icing up. Cameron was telling to me, there must be a giant time skip because they're painting pumpkins. What's going on? Are they going to be skipping Thanksgiving? Is this later on in the season?
I'm a little frantic about the mini details.
And I was like, girl, chill. I think it's just the fact that they're painting pumpkins because that's what they have to paint, not because it's signifying the start of Halloween or anything like that.
I think I still think that it's a little... Was I in an ice class? Nope. I was in an art class every year in high school,
unfortunately.
In high school? I don't think I was. I think I was in art when I was in middle school, and then...
I didn't take a single art class. I failed for not replicating a Leonardo da Vinci painting.
I took choir and theater because I was a theater kid and a choir kid, so you can...
Well, I was too, but there was no such thing as that in my high school because we were broke.
If you're in choir, you sing holiday music... the first week of September, and you do that the entire time until you have your holiday concert, and then it's the middle of winter and everything is cold and you're singing about like normally like spring and flowers and summer.
That's so funny. It's crazy.
So if he was like a choir boy, like I would understand that, but like I don't know how it works in art if they typically jump the gun, because it's not like you have to rehearse for anything. He's not rehearsing how to draw pumpkins or whatever. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways, moving on from the pumpkins, clearly he's struggling. He's just staring at the little canvas, and he's clearly building up a storm within him. He's building a storm inside, and I'm saying that on purpose because we know what's going to happen. He's at some point, he's going to explode. No, eventually the storm is going to actually break. That's outwardly. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. And then we have him suddenly bursting out in violence, or should I say violence?
Oh, I wanted to make a pun. Hold on.
Go ahead.
Pause.
I'm paused.
He's using a paintbrush.
We actually get to see Paul, and here's the thing, right? Because last season we were talking about how, was he actually physically injured? If he was, how come he was the only one physically injured with Eclipso and whatnot? But he actually was. So was that self-inflicted? What happened there? I'm surprised.
He was in a coma, wasn't he?
No, he was sent to a mental rehabilitation center.
I don't know if
center.
He would have... He has, like, a cane, so I don't know...
He was clearly
I'm
injured.
Fully shocked that the man is still alive.
Well, I'm happy for him that he was able to get his job
Very
back.
Happy for him, yes.
He was in a mental hospital, though.
Yeah, he was in a mental hospital.
Like, he wasn't in, like, the regular hospital.
No,
so
that's what I said.
I thought he was in, like, the regular hospital.
Yeah.
Didn't his, like... I thought his brain was, like, deep-fried by, like, the cosmic
I thought
staff.
So, too, but...
Well, he clearly
I guess
got
not.
Better.
What is his medical insurance plan? Does anybody know?
Whatever Blue Valley High
Whatever
School
Whatever Blue Valley High School has.
But
okay.
Anaya, it's honestly, good. Anaya probably set them up with pretty good insurance, and I guess
she definitely
Sherman
did.
Didn't...
Yeah.
Sherman didn't change it, so...
Yeah. So then we have the training scene. I don't have much written here except for, like, it's very fun to see new tricks with Cosmo.
Mm-hmm. I hate the sound effect. When I listened to it on my television, it sounded like bone crunching. I realized now, like when I was listening to it with headphones, like rewatching it, that it's
like
a firework sound effect. But it sounded like they were just snapping bones on my television.
Before.
Yeah,
I
wasn't a fan.
When it's actually in the sky, but the crackling was starting.
It doesn't make
then.
Any sense. Why is there crackling when they're.
I don't know. But I really love the. Like, I know he calls it the shooting star, I would call it the sparkler. But I do like it.
Yeah,
it's fun. I want to see Courtney in the middle of the sky have fireworks shooting out of the staff while she's fighting someone. Like, that sounds so much fun. So it cuts the scene in half. So the first half, it's like Sylvester showing off, and then you have Paula and Barbara again, and they cannot bake. They're horrible at
they can't
bake, but they're
it
friends,
does
they're
look
bonding.
Different from the picture. Yeah, I that's fun.
And they tried twice. This is now going to be the
yeah,
third
and they're
time.
Going to do it a third time. Yeah,
and it's so funny. No. Third time's a charm. Oh yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, I hope for the best for them.
Apparently,
I mean, we did get promo
out.
Of them. So yeah. She is going to serve.
She's
going to
get that cake eventually.
Yeah. No. I love it. Honestly, like that's great. It's this show works best. Exactly like that. When you're balancing like silly, ridiculous, mm-hmm. stupid things with like actual like deeper storylines, like
yeah.
I really like that they have that down. And it's so much better than when you're in season two and everything is so serious all the time, and you can't have 1 second to
a
let
fun.
Barbara mm-hmm. bake a cake and fail miserably with Paula.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's yeah. We needed that balance, and we didn't. Really have that in season two, but we've already had so many fun moments, and it's not even about jokes, it's about the dynamics of how people are going to react to the situations that they're in because of who they are, and then putting a whole bunch of different people together and watching them like bounce off of each other in terms of like how they would respond to a certain situation. That's what makes it so funny. That's what makes Paula and Barbara so funny. So it goes back to the training, the shooting star sequence, and we have, she falls because she tries it, it doesn't work. And then we have Sylvester be like, it's about you! And the way he said
Courtney.
Yeah, the way he said the word you made me laugh. But
I didn't
really
notice anything weird about it.
It's just the way that he said
it's
it.
It's incredible line delivery, honestly.
It's not about me, it's about you! And the way he said that was funny to me. But It actually made me a little bit emotional. Like, I didn't cry or anything, but I was like, oh.
Really?
With the flashback. Not that part.
The no, flashback. The flashback.
The show does flashbacks pretty well.
The hugs. I just. Whenever I see the hug from the JSA, from the finale, it makes me feel so many emotions because it's just, mm-hmm. I miss the dynamic
of them.
It's such
a good
like
scene.
Montage flashbacks scene. Typically don't do much
we
for
me. We get that, but it works for us, so we're going to speak now, and you're going to stay
don't
quiet
ruin
about
this
your flashback.
For us.
Okay, don't ruin this for us. No, it really, and it's just the Cosmic Staff music slowed down to the montage of like memories for Courtney.
But they
it's
just
never
took that.
Not going
they
to
just
get
blatantly
me.
Took that from the finale again.
I don't care. You can do it as many times as you want, and it's still
don't
going
do it
to
as many
it's
times
a good
as you want.
Scene.
DC Stargirl, don't do it as
please
many
do
times
it
as
you
want. As many times
you
are,
as
you
DC
want.
DC Stargirl, I will allow scene. It for four times. This
but if
season,
they do that for other people,
four times.
I will allow it for a maximum of four times this season.
If they did that for, like, Rick and Beth, for example, or even Starcat, for example, I would actually, like, get emotional. Like,
I would start crying.
Like, if
I,
you have them,
no.
like...
Okay, I would well, prefer...
You have your emotions handled. Great for you. But we are a little bit...
We get it, Cameron. You are an emotionally stable person.
Like, I'm really
congratulations.
Not.
Congratulations. That's
not.
Good for you.
I
we're
cry
not.
A lot. I just
unstable.
Cry a lot over real life things.
Yeah. But no, I feel like especially if it's like a situation where you know like one of them like one of like a pair got hurt and you have a flashback of like all of their moments like together and then like they're back and then they're like so happy that they're back. If they do something like that for the other JSA friend, even if they do it for Cindy. Even if they do it for Cindy and they flash back to the point when she was like, Courtney helped me and she was falling into the Shadowlands, I would also get emotional about that because
that
you
would
see how
me.
Far that they've come. Like, stuff like that gets to me.
So we cut over to Mike and Jakeem in the bathroom. Mike is checking to make sure desperately that there's nobody else in that stall because obviously they don't want to attract attention to themselves. He's already very bossy.
Oh,
with,
so bossy.
With Jakeem. Where he's like, I made this rule, it's infallible, whatever.
And Jakeem is such a good, like, Jakeem's a good kid. Like, he doesn't want to get in trouble. He wants to do the best. He wants, like, you know, he wants to be good. He doesn't want to get in trouble. He's trying his best. He's confused. He literally said before he has a hard time comprehending half of the things that Thunderbolt says to him. Because he doesn't understand all his references, and he's just trying. And you have Mike bossing him. You can tell, okay, my prediction is, you can tell, even though they're still friends, and I'm sure they'll still stay friends, you can tell that Mike is thinking, I can use Jakeem, as in saying, okay, I don't have the pen anymore, but I can. If I have a handle of Jakeem, then technically I do have the pen because I can use Jakeem to get what I want, kind of thing. Like, as in, he's almost starting to see Jakeem as the pen instead of, like, Jakeem as his own independent person kind of thing. Not to say that he doesn't see Jakeem as a person, but you can tell that that's kind of the dynamic. And actually, interestingly enough, isn't that not the dynamic that Sylvester kind of has with Pat? Just not mean or cruel yet necessarily,
yeah,
but you can start to see see that it's developing, right? So I feel that Mike might get a real shock, like in a few episodes, if Jakeem says, "Actually, the pen pick is went to better hands. That's me, and I'm not going to read your wish. I'm going to make my own wish, kind of thing, and just do this myself." I think that's. What Jakeem needs, which is, and I'm going to think that it would feel pretty rewarding. Or I could actually, we know that Cindy eventually goes up to them, and I can imagine Cindy being the one to point that out. I can imagine Cindy telling Jakeem, like, why do you let him boss you around like that? Like, you're the one with the pen, you're the one that makes the decisions, kind of thing. And he'd be like, ooh, you're right. Thanks, scary lady. But anyways, they're in the bathroom here. Neither of them know what toxic masculinity is, but at least Jakeem thinks he might know what it is enough to actually use it in a sentence. He's scared that they're cheating, which is funny. And then Mike tells him what wish that he needs to say, and he ends it with amen, which was so funny. Because that means Mike wrote that. Like, Mike wrote that, and he gave it...
No. I don't think that
you
Mike
You don't think so?
Amen.
Oh, you
I
don't?
Thought, no, I thought Jakeem added
oh,
it.
Oh, you think Jakeem added it in at the end? Oh, that's funny. And so then we get the Thunderbolts responding to the wish with
the most vague thing ever.
The killer has many names, which is technically the first clue.
Yeah.
No, but that doesn't that narrow get. It down.
But it does.
Everybody in Blue Valley has many names. Of course
not, no. I mean...
Well, right, because if you have a superhero name, then automatically you have more than one.
I feel like it means that it's not...
somebody who has a nickname.
Yeah, it could be anything. I was going to say, like, well, it wouldn't be... For example, if Barbara was a suspect, we know she's not. But if she was, then, well, Barbara kind of only goes by Barbara. But at the same time... Mm-hmm. You know, that's not really true for anyone, because anyone could be given a nickname.
Oh, I did think that it was funny that Mike blamed Jakeem for... Or not funny, but it was interesting that Mike is blaming Jakeem for how it went awry.
Exactly.
And
I know, which is... But that's what I'm saying. That's such Sylvester behavior. And notice that Sylvester and Mike don't seem to agree with
each other. Yeah, they don't
and
like
I
each other.
I find that again with the way that Sylvester said to Courtney, and sometimes you love Mike. Like, you've just showed up and you're the one to say that. Like, actually, Mike and Courtney do love, like, each other. They're family. Yes. You're the one that maybe no one loves here. So, moving on, we have Sylvester and Court actually show up to the Shade's house. So that's interesting, because I'm pretty sure that was Sylvester's idea. He said he was there to apologize.
Yes, he wanted to apologize. He initially did. What do you mean?
He's such a loser. He did not apologize.
How? No, but yes, he tried to.
Well, of course he didn't, but he wanted to initially.
And how does a man go from come with me while I make amends with the shadow dude to the very next episode, all right, time to kill two people in a public grocery store? Like, I don't understand him.
I don't know, but it's clearly something bad's gonna happen, so... But yeah, no, that scene is mostly noteworthy just because you get the drop that nobody came to his funeral except for Pat, and you get the cosmic staff fighting in between the two of them. Like, it flies out of Courtney's hands to go into Sylvester's hands so that they could attack the Shade, and then it flies back when Courtney's like, stop!
Yeah, it flies back. I could tell that she's actually surprised. I feel like Courtney didn't expect that.
No, she didn't. I mean, she clearly didn't. She was like, whoa.
Yeah. The other thing that I have to point out is when the Shade said, I have no intention of dying ever. Okay, so you're dying this season.
Yeah, he's definitely dying this season. That's you don't
no,
just say
you don't
that.
Just say that. Absolutely
I actually
not.
Like the Shade. I kind of wish Sylvester would die.
Oh, I think he's dying,
I think
too.
They're all dying.
Oh, no.
So... I find it interesting that the Shade is so offended by this. Like, I don't know. I know that they need him to kind of move on so that they can have more room for other characters and then bring him back for Infinity Inc.
Yeah, he'll definitely be there with the Helix stuff.
Well, we know that he's coming back because we have Shadowlands behind the scenes pictures with him later on. So he's definitely coming back. But it's just... I
think it's smart.
I like his excuse later on when he's speaking to Rick and Beth, and he says, oh, well, there's both of our egos are too big and we can't kind of coexist, which is like, I admire that he says that about himself, but I feel like it's not really in character for him to be that offended that he would fully leave just after that one bad day.
See, I don't think that's actually it. I think he's lying for the most part. I think he is genuinely concerned about the green stuff that's going on.
Oh, I think that too.
And he also was genuinely super hurt by the cosmic staff. So he didn't want to be the lesser man around town.
Okay.
And I think it is smart because you see a lot of the Shade in the last season. He wasn't a series regular, but he was definitely there for almost all the episodes.
He can spy this way, though.
Like, even if he was, like, not there, like, he was just, like, a shadow, like you know, like, not fully formed.
Yeah.
He got curb stomped.
That is smart.
He was lingering there for a while, so I think it's fine for him to not be there.
I think
for a couple
also
episodes,
you can,
especially because he's 100% going to be coming back. And that's only like four episodes away.
Yeah,
so like
that makes sense, and it gives us more time with the Crocs too, which I think we're all very excited for. So that's fun.
It gives us more time with the Crocs. It gives us more time with Sylvester, but later. It gives us more time with Cameron. So, like, you know, I'm fine with
also,
it.
Also, I could say that definitely he may be able to kind of spy in the sense that, like, he maybe stays in his shadow form and maybe he sees something. And then, like, for example, we know at some point, like, someone gets an anonymous tip that could be the shade. We don't know, like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Something like that. Like,
yeah, the next episode, anonymous tip.
It could be he's just a good person to spy, especially if they are being spied upon already, which, oh, that was the other thing I was going to notice, that they didn't have the camera showing that they were being watched in this episode the way that they did in the first episode. Which is interesting.
I don't exactly know what that means, but it is interesting that it didn't happen.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be, like, consistent, so guess not. So,
like, they're still being watched. We just don't see more of it today.
Presumably.
We're guessing, yeah. So then we have the Whitmore Dugan house. Apparently they call themselves the Dugmores, so we should start calling them the Dugmores. Have to say the Dugmores.
I think they're saying Dugmore.
Oh, really?
Well, I guess Dugmore.
Why would it be Dugmore?
Dugmore sounds harder to say. I think it's Dugmore. I don't know. Whatever.
I'm calling them the Whitmore Dugans.
I'm calling them the Whitmore Dugans. Okay. Yeah. That's what I'm doing.
Well, that's what the cast calls them. But Whitmore Dugans.
I don't
Dugans
care.
Is longer.
I'm not in the cast.
I know, but
I don't get that.
I like that there was a shortened version, because I was always saying Whitmore Dugans every time, and I'm being like, that's a mouthful. But we can continue saying it the long way. It's fine.
It's four syllables.
Whitmore Dugan. It's not that hard.
So, interestingly enough, we do have Sylvester mention Eclipso and the Shade talking to him and giving him the idea of killing the host of whoever Eclipso was possessing, and how he said, oh, it was just reminding me of the beginning of the end. And he straight up says, you know, that I killed the Justice Society. Why did I get to come back? I miss them. Which is interesting, because now we have a dynamic where Sylvester is saying he misses his friends, but we have the Shade said that his friends never cared about him. He has Pat right there, who clearly cares about him, and he's kind of disrespecting him. So Sylvester's kind of a mess.
He misses his friends, but his friends were dead. When they couldn't have come to his funeral because they're dead. So
also,
I don't know
nobody
if that necessarily
cared about
contradicts.
Even if they were alive.
I know, the way that the shade made it sound was that, I know it made sense that they didn't show up because they were dead, but at the same time, he made it sound like no one even liked you back then. They were just kind of putting up with you.
Obviously, nobody liked him.
And that Pat was the only one who really cared. That's kind of, you know, what I got was the implication of that.
Okay.
But he says he's mad.
The implication was that he sucked as a person. And nobody liked him, which is true.
We have that he says that, you know, he's mad at himself for coming back, which is like, oh, okay. And then he walks off, and we don't really know. Well, we do. He goes off to have a conversation with the staff later. So, but before that, we have our hour night scene at last.
Yes.
It's very short. Like, I was expecting them to speak a little bit more before the Shade interrupted them. Mm-hmm.
Me too, honestly.
It was very short.
I expect a little bit more.
I just...
But it's okay.
Especially because we saw the behind the scenes of that scene specifically.
Yeah, we were
like, I thought that they were really going to be in there for a while, but they were not.
I thought I wanted to hear more of what Beth had to say in response to what Rick said, because she didn't even have a chance to respond, you know, before.
Yeah.
That's what I cared about, because I feel like... This scene parallels a scene from episode 3 of season 2 when Beth was the one upset. And what was so special about that moment was Rick got to comfort her, and you got to see, you know, him actually make her feel better. In this scene, Rick is upset, and then it just cuts off, and you don't actually get, you know, Beth able to pay it forward and do the same thing and parallel what Rick did for her. Because the Shade interrupts them, and then it just ends. And you see that Rick is really actually genuinely upset by what the Shade says, that he's ditching him. He has no new advice to give him for Grundy. His hourglass is all messed up, and he's worried that, like, he's going to lose his powers in the middle of a fight. Like, those are all legitimate things to, like, stress him out. And Beth didn't even have anything to say. And that's what I feel like is kind of sad, because it kind of cheapened the moment that really could have been a really excellent moment.
Right.
Because it was a little too short. But at least it was there, you know, and that's deliberate. Mm-hmm. So they really did put a deliberate parallel there. Like
they did.
That was an effort. They said, no, we're giving them that parallel.
I just hope they gave them a little bit more
I think there's like going to be more next episode.
Seconds of more screen time.
Yeah, I think there's going to be more next episode because mm-hmm. we're going to lead into whatever it is that makes Beth discover something in episode 4. And I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure the Aronite car scene is happening next episode because Beth is wearing a little bit of green. And we know she wears green because we saw that in the season 3 trailer. So very excited yes. about that. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I wanted to point out is the whole thing with the hourglass and Rick's secret. All of season 2, Rick was keeping the whole Grundy thing a secret. So he didn't tell anyone about that. This time, he has another big, stupid secret, like, not telling anyone that his hourglass could technically, like, fall apart at any moment mm-hmm. is a serious secret. But the difference yes. is he's mm-hmm. told Beth, okay?
Exactly.
That's a significant difference. Like, that's improvement for Rick. But the question is this going to be a secret they're going to keep together? Or is...
I think so.
I think so, too.
I think it should be.
I think
it's
which is
so stupid for them
like
to do
that.
I think that's absolutely
but
true.
That tells you just how bad Beth has it for Rick if she's actually going to agree to keep that a secret.
Beth doesn't make enough bad decisions, and I yeah. think that she should be allowed.
Yes, I agree. And it, the fact that
Beth should be allowed to make bad decisions too, and maybe yeah. say a bad word.
Beth making a bad decision because her crush is clouding her judgment is actually really fun. Like, I really yes. do like that a lot, actually, because it goes to show, you know, what one of her weaknesses is in terms of not what everyone likes to say, which is like, oh, well, she can't fight or this and that, but actually in her thinking, which is her strength. Mm-hmm. But you see what can distract her, and Rick, you know, begging her, please, like, no, let's just keep this between us kind of thing. That's going to pull at her heartstrings. Mm-hmm. And she's going to be like, okay, I'm special to him. I'm not going to share his secret. And Beth's whole thing was wanting to be included. So that's, like, extra, like, pulling on all of her, like, heartstrings for her specifically. And
the
I definitely...
The implications.
Yes. No, there's a lot of them, though. And, like, again, like, I can't believe, like, Rick really is telling her, you know, like, he's like, yeah, I'm mm-hmm. telling you. And also, it's true, too, because if we rewind backwards to the scene with the cafeteria, when Rick is talking about Grundy, he's specifically mm-hmm. talking to Beth and says, Grundy's not the killer. Like he wants Beth to know, you know, that he's being responsible. And he's...
Yes.
He's not just letting this monster, like, run around. Like, he cares specifically about what Beth thinks about that. And then he turns around and goes, guys, I checked, right? Like, no one asked him. Mm-hmm. But he really just mm-hmm. wants Beth to have a good opinion of him. And I think, again, that might backfire later on with the whole secret or the hourglass thing. Because if mm-hmm. he's doing this because he wants, you know, Beth to care about him maybe the way that he does, or he wants her to, like... I guess, think that he's going to try to be open the way that she is, and then it backfires in the case that, like, he gets hurt or she gets hurt, he's definitely going to blame himself, because that's what he's been doing kind of the entire time with Grundy. Like, he blames himself, right? Yeah. So I'm mm-hmm. a little bit worried of where that could go, if not worried in a bad way, but just like, oh, that's going to be drama. Mm-hmm. Like, if Rick gets hurt or if Beth gets hurt, and Rick... It's going to be like, this is my fault because I asked her to keep this a secret from everyone else. And maybe if everyone else knew, then we wouldn't have been in this situation. So I feel like episode 4 might be where this storyline picks up, because we know that it's directed by the stunt coordinator, right? Who is also doing episode 3. And specifically, it says, like, I checked, right? And the episode description for episode 4 is... Courtney reaches out to Cameron, which is, okay, fair, but I don't think that involves a huge amount of fight sequences.
No.
And then the other line of the summary is that Pat reaches out to an old friend, and I also don't think that's going to cause as huge of a fight scene that, like, the grocery store thing is going to cause. So for me,
right.
that tells me it's something's going on with Beth, and we've seen in the trailer 2 seconds mm-hmm. of Beth suited up in the cafeteria at the school in the dark.
Yeah.
So I think something goes down. So I'm excited. So I think that's where it start. Like, it's just starting here. Like, their story is really just starting now. And we're not going to get to see the full picture until probably episode 3. And then it's really going to unfold in episode 4.
But we go over to Sylvester and Courtney, who are having another heart-to-heart. I feel like that's all that Courtney has done in this episode.
Right.
But so she is basically like, hey, I am in Blue Valley, and Pat has helped me not only be Stargirl, but be Courtney Whitmore. So I think that you should try to listen to Pat's advice and let this town help you be Sylvester Pemberton. Which is fine and valid, and honestly, I'm kind of intrigued for that. I know it's definitely not going to last, because we know that the grocery store fight is happening yeah. next episode. So it's going to be incredibly short-lived. But I am kind of, my interest is slightly piqued for that specific Sylvester storyline. The only other thing that's noteworthy, is, I guess, is Sylvester and Courtney are both like, yeah, we don't think the Shade did it. Which, oh, yeah. I feel like, I don't think that anybody really thought the Shade did it.
No.
Like, in the audience watching. I don't think he cares enough to kill the gambler.
No. But also, it would ruin a lot if he did that. Because, yeah. like, his whole reasoning for staying behind in Blue Valley in the first place was because he was just, like, intrigued. Like, he's not that stupid. He's not that kind of person who would do that.
So he wouldn't kill someone that way either at all. Like, if he want, he was right when he said if he wanted to kill someone, you know, that's not the way that he would do it.
Right. So, and then it cuts back over to Cameron, who is standing in his art room
because
that
he's
has
so rich in his little mansion. Yeah.
And obviously he still can't paint because he still is getting that pain. So the way that they frame that scene is very much like you can tell they're like, once again, they're like, this is a villainous that like, just like the over the shoulder zoom pan. It's not a zoom, but the pan or whatever.
It's dark.
Like, you can tell from that framing. It's dark. I feel like there's no fireplace, but there should be like a fireplace ominously in front of him. Like,
and the distance too is interesting with the placements of the grandparents being so far behind him,
right? And yet over his shoulder.
Over his shoulder, yeah. Also, you know, I feel like here is a situation where you see he had so many flowers in that art room. Like, I'm sure we knew, because the only thing I've ever seen him draw was flowers, other than the
and
mural.
Courtney
and pumpkins Courtney, for some reason. Flower.
But he said Courtney was like his first time. He said Courtney was like the first time he's ever even tried to just like actually draw portraits other than his own father. So before then, it was just exclusively flowers. Like this boy had his whole grief process of his mother was funneled into this art, basically art therapy, and now that's gone.
Right. Well, I think so. This scene is kind of this scene, as well as the scene before that he was in. Again, they only are like not even 2 full minutes of screen time, but it's really getting you into his headspace, I guess, going into the season, because you have him with some sort. Obviously, as Tam said, the way that he used his art was therapeutic to him, and it's how he honors his mother. And so there's this theme that we're introduced to now where he is being pushed to fulfill his father's legacy, to honor his father, to become his father. Obviously, from the only sort of the only semi-parental figures that he has in his life are saying, like, no, you have to forsake the thing that you did, that you loved, that you did to honor your mother in order to honor your father. And it is so clear that he does not
want that.
He does not want any of that. He wants to, like, you can tell, like, he wants to be normal. He wants to be just doing whatever he was doing before. He was perfectly content before. He was grieving, sure. But he was fine with that. And he acted out in violence before, not, I don't think it's because he's inherently a violent person. I think it's because genuinely he hates the situation that he's been put in, and it's completely outside of his control, and he feels very helpless about it, and there's nobody who's helping him in the way that he wants help, that he needs help. And I think obviously Courtney is going to presumably change that a little bit, but since she isn't even interacting with him yet, it's, he clearly feels very isolated.
Isolated.
Yeah.
Okay, for me, what I wanted to point out specifically is, I know I seem to say this every episode of the podcast, but again, like, he grew up with his grandparents for most of his life. Mm-hmm. Like, Jordan was not in the picture as much as people thought. So that's a huge bombshell, that the people who you've trusted to be, like, you know, someone that you can depend on your entire life, like your friendly grandparents, are now telling you that actually you are a ice monster, and this is what you need to do, it's your family legacy, and all that kind of stuff. That's actually quite honestly terrifying. So you can kind of feel the tension that he has now with his grandparents. Like, he's living, you can kind of think now that Cameron himself thinks, oh my gosh, I'm living with monsters and they're my family, you know, because that's freaky. But that's also the only people that he has left, and it's just, it's very confusing. So the whole thing too is that you can have this situation internally where he's like, okay, well, has my entire life kind of been like a lie? Because we see now absolutely that they're grooming him, but they've been probably grooming him his entire life, like, very slowly. They're just now really, like, pushing the gas pedal now on this icicle car. Like, they're really trying to get him fully on board, and they don't really care what he thinks. So I don't think they're also, they won't, maybe not the grandfather. And I know that we're going to find out that, like, Lily and Sophis are going to have two different kind of opinions on the same thing. Like, they both want him to be isolated, but maybe the grandmother more harshly than the grandfather. But I feel like they're not going to be afraid to actually hurt him, like, not physically, but, you know, to really, like, mess things up for him, to push him on the path. They already are, honestly. I think it's going to accelerate. I think it's going to get worse.
We get over to Cindy, who is, she opens up the laptop in the ISA tunnels. She's met with, like, a password screen. Just get Beth's help, girlie.
Yeah, get Beth's help.
It's really not that hard. I'm sure Beth, out of everyone, well, Courtney would help you more, but Beth would certainly
Beth is on your side, though. She wants to believe you, so you can ask her, and she'll be like, oh, let's...
Like, you totally can.
But I feel like...
Also...
Yeah.
Also, you see that there's, like, a shadow that's
in I that saw that too.
Scene.
Oh, that's so the scene. I thought it was in the other scene. That's why I was like, I didn't see that. But if it's in the scene, then maybe.
There's a shadow that passes on the right side of the screen when Cindy is working on the laptop.
Could it be Todd? I'm
always going to think that it's Todd. Todd is my number one murder suspect by as proxy of Mr. Bones. He's my number one. Like, I think it's totally
him. Yeah, me too.
But
I could be Dragon King back.
Could also be Dragon King.
But it makes more sense to be Todd. Especially if he's interfering with the Shade because he's close by.
Right. And so the Shade leaving is actually going to be more beneficial to him. Right. That would make sense. But so we then end the episode with Crusher and Paula at the gym, and they're like, oh, they're going to find out. And that's basically all that we get about it. But
I'm sure they're just referring to the fact that Crusher was on the scene with the car.
I don't think so. I think they're talking about something else, and we don't know what that something else is, but it has to do with what you were saying earlier, was why they would want revenge.
Oh, why they want revenge. Okay.
But I don't think that it's going to... I think that's a complete red herring.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think it's a completely separate storyline of something that happened years ago, and Sylvester will maybe catch wind of it and then go after
maybe we're going to have a flashback to that at the beginning of next episode, and we will be getting a 10 years before flashback.
But, yeah. And that's about it. So, do we have any just, like, general, like...
What if the gambler was who they got broken out of jail? Like, what if he paid off and, like, somehow managed to get them out? And then they were like, oh, thanks. And then he did something else or something like that. Yeah. And they were like, oh, And they don't know. Well, what if they, what if, okay, there's two things. Because that would be him helping them. So what if he actually was the one that got them out of jail and they don't know that? So they think that they have beef with him, but they're like, well, we didn't kill him. But actually, they will be probably ruled out as suspects later on because they didn't do it. But also, they are going to feel guilt because they're going to find out that actually the gambler was the reason that they were able to go home to Artemis. And then they're really going to be on board to help like solve the crime. The name of the episode is called The Suspects. So I wanted to know.
Yes, there were like no suspects in this episode.
No, that's not what I was going to say. I was going to say, do we think that like the way that they cut the last few scenes, like boom, like 1, 2, 3, 4,
those
are the suspects? That's what I'm curious. If it is, then is that just what court, like the way that so far with the information that they have that those are the suspects? Or are those actually legitimately the only suspects that we have?
Well, I don't even think that Cameron would be...
Well, it's not Cameron, it's the Mankents, I think. Because it shows them as the whole house, as an icicle, as an institution.
Okay. Okay, right. But also, Courtney doesn't know that it's genetic. She has zero idea. She doesn't know that the grandparents... Yeah. Like, she knows that the grandparents are not great people, but she doesn't know that they're, like, frost
They're
giants.
Also, like, so, ice-powered, yeah.
Like,
but
there's...
But Sylvester thinks no it's an ISA person, and so maybe he does know. You know?
But does he...
I'm not sure.
Would they have told... This is a genuine question. Because Sylvester... I know Sylvester is not going to be happy with Courtney at all. Would they have told Sylvester that Courtney has a crush on Icicle's child? Because I feel like there is no way in hell that they brought that up to him.
No, they're going
like,
to
Courtney
find out later.
Courtney sat Pat down and was like, you cannot tell him. Because he's going to go out and kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think he knows. I think he's going to find out later. But what
I think he has no idea.
No, but okay, but it's not about the Courtney thing. But it's about, for me, I'm thinking about if Jordan was Icicle, for some reason, in my belief, I feel like being Icicle is like a generational thing, in which case maybe the grandmother was Icicle first, and then Jordan became Icicle afterwards, and now Cameron's also going to become Icicle. That's why it matters so much to her. In which case, maybe, you know, because Sylvester was only 15 when he started, he actually did know that, like, Icicle's parents are also evil. And that's why he would be sus if he found out that they were in town and everything. He doesn't probably know that now, but if he did,
maybe.
I know it's a stretch. But I'm just... So I guess to go back to my question... Are those the suspects? Not necessarily that the JSA know of, because clearly we think it's going to be Todd or Mr. Bones or Nurse Love folded into the mix, and we didn't see any of them yet. But it's not that we didn't see them yet, because we know that, for example, okay, if the last few scenes that were cut altogether are all the suspects, it includes Todd, because the shade left with Todd in his mist, right? So, like...
And accounts, the shadow
and the
Cindy
shadows
thing.
With Cindy
yeah.
thing. And also, it includes Grundy, because they were talking about Grundy with Rick. And
okay.
So sure. I would argue that technically maybe all the suspects indeed are there at the end.
And Sylvester's there, if Sylvester somehow did it.
Right. Sylvester was there twice. So maybe that's extra.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's what they meant. I mean, we'll figure it out later as the season
What's the name of next? Next episode is The Blackmail.
The blackmail.
What do you think is this black?
I think the blackmail is either going to be Cindy planting the laptop.
Yeah.
Or that whatever anonymous tip they get is also going to actually be blackmail and be like, I know what you did. Or alternatively, it's going to be an I know what you did situation to the Crocs.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
And they're going to have to say it, which is why.
That's what I'm thinking too, which explains why then later... You have Sylvester so angry and being like, well, they moved in next door and you let them move in next door. Like that huge screaming match, you know?
That's exactly what he says.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for watching. You can follow the show at Star Squadcast on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr. You can follow me. I'm Cameron at Blue Valley Breaking News on Tumblr or Ice Hour Night. Is it a singular hour night? I think it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Or Ice Hour Night on Twitter.
Oh, it's my turn. I'm Adiba, and you can follow me at Gert Starlight on every platform.
Okay, so I'm Tam. You can follow me on Instagram at That Killer Vibe or Twitter at TKV Our Nights, no dash. We figured that out last week. Or Tumblr at Our Nights with an S.
So yeah, we apologize for the show coming out a little bit later this week. This is just, and it's going to be coming out later at this point in time for basically the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. This is just because we want to make sure that all three of us can be here while we're recording and we can watch it a couple times. And so we're not recording it at like 2 a.m. like we were last time. So thank you so much for listening, and we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.